Ecclesiastes chapter 1, and as I say, we're looking at the subject of vanity, the harness of humanity. And I think it will become clear the significance of that title as we go through our study today. Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and the verse 12. I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem, and I gave my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom concerning all the things that are done under heaven. This sort of veil hath God given to the sons of men to be exercised therewith. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and vexation of spirit. That which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered. I communed with my own heart, saying, lo, I am come to great estate, and have gotten more wisdom than all they that have been before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I give my heart to know wisdom, and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is vexation of spirit. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow. I said in mine heart, go to now, I will prove thee with mirth. Therefore enjoy pleasure, and behold, this also is vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what doeth it? I sought in mine heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting mine heart with wisdom, and to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was that good for the sons of men, which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life. I made me great works, I builded me houses, I planted me vineyards, I made me gardens and orchards, and I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruits. I made me pools of water to water therewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. I got me servants and maidens, and had servants born in my house, and also I had great possessions of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I gathered me also silver and gold, and the particular treasure of kings and of the provinces. I got me men singers and women singers, and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments, and that of all sorts. So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. Whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labour, and this was my portion of all my labour. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labour that I had laboured to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. And I turned myself, and to behold wisdom and madness and folly, for what can the man do that cometh after the king, even that which hath been already done? Then I saw that wisdom exceedeth folly, as far as light excelleth darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walketh in darkness, and I myself perceived also that one event happeneth to them all. Then said I in my heart, as it happeneth to the fool, so it happeneth even to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart, this is also vanity. For there is no remembrance of the wise more than of the fool forever, seeing that which now is in the days to come shall all be forgotten. And how dieth the wise man as the fool? Therefore I hated life, because the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous unto me, for all is vanity and vexation of spirit. Yea, I hated all my labour which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me, and who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool, yet shall he have rule over all my labour wherein I have laboured, and wherein I have showed myself wise under the sun. This is also vanity. Therefore I went about to cause my heart to despair of all the labour which I took under the sun. For there is a man whose labour is in wisdom and in knowledge and in equity. Yet to a man that hath not laboured therein shall he leave it for his portion. This also is vanity and a great evil, or calamity. The word evil is not always in the sense of sin. It is usually taken in the Old Testament to mean the aftermath of sin, which is the calamity of the sin. Verse 22. And what hath man of all his labour and of the fixation of his heart, wherewith he hath laboured under the sun? For all his days are sorrows, and his travail grief. Yea, his heart taketh not rest in the night. This is also vanity. For there is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy the good of his labour. This also I saw, that it was from the hand of God. For who can eat, or who else can hasten hereto more than I? For God giveth to a man that is good in his sight wisdom and knowledge and joy, but to the sinner he giveth travail to gather and to heap up, that he may give to him that is good before God. This also is vanity and vexation of spirit. Amen. We trust the Lord will bless this rather lengthy reading of his word to our hearts, but I've taken the time to read this portion of scripture because I intend to deal with this entire passage today as we look at the subject of vanity, the harness of humanity. As I look on the world today and as I watch and listen to world media, it never ceases to amaze me the unshakable faith that man has in humanity. Now, I'm not speaking particularly of what we might call self-confidence. That's on an individual level. We hear so much about self-confidence and building up one's self-esteem. That's not what I'm speaking about here. I'm speaking of man's confidence in humanity as a whole. The accumulated knowledge of centuries has, I believe, given humanity a false sense of security. There is a false assumption that human ingenuity can fix every problem, that human ingenuity can relieve every pain, that human ingenuity can prolong life, and that ultimately human ingenuity can restore life. There's no doubt that human intelligence has propelled humanity into areas that were unforeseen, undreamt of 100 years ago. And we look at life today and there are ways in which humanity has excelled in its own right. You look at medicine. The first full-face transplant occurred last week, where they took the bones, the jawbones, the sinews, the nerves of one person and put it onto another. Full-face transplant. You look at the space industry and you see that as of next year or the year after, there will be commercial flights to space. And there is a spaceport in New Mexico where you can pay a couple of hundred thousand to fly to space and to experience weightlessness. You see the science of criminology with the discovery of DNA. Cases that were closed 100 or 200 years ago are being reopened and new discoveries are being made. Cases that were closed 20 years ago are being reopened, and people are in jail today who were acquitted 30 or 40 years ago are being jailed today because of the advance in our knowledge as humanity. I read a book a few years ago now, of the first American expedition to the North Pole that was done just after the Civil War. And there was mutiny on the boat. The whole party disintegrated and some of the people survived and came home. Just 20-30 years ago, a Dutch group went up and exhumed the body, found the body of the captain who was buried and discovered that he was poisoned with arsenic. 150 years ago. Humanity now can see into the past by the discoveries that they are making. You look at the advent of the camera. As it is used in medicine, they can put cameras through veins and down arteries and into all sorts of parts of the body to discover what's going on in the body. Security cameras in space, cameras for private use. You can go nowhere today, but you must be aware that a camera is on you, and that you could potentially have your picture on YouTube. A lady was in a mall just recently. She was texting on her cell phone. She tripped up and fell into a fountain. Hoping that no one saw her, she steps out of the fountain, goes on about life as though nothing had happened. And when she got home, the image of that happening was on YouTube. Across the world, a sensation. The power of the microphone. How many politicians in recent years have been caught out by a live mic that they thought was dead? Men making smutty comments about women across the room and were caught out on a live mic. And I say all of this, beloved, and I use all of these examples to force home to our minds that humanity thinks itself to be omnipresent. The eyes of cameras, the ears of microphones are everywhere. Humanity thinks itself to be omniscient. It knows all things. Those attributes of God are now, in a relative sense, being attributed to humanity and expanding within humanity, and humanity thinks that it is above God. And if the world at large has become this such a powerful machine, the advertising industry has brought that powerful machine to our doorsteps and into our living rooms. And all of this power, it is told us, can be harnessed for our good. That happiness, that satisfaction, it can be gotten on our fingertips by the click of a mouse. The basic premise of every ad is that a particular item advertised can solve all immediate problems, can give immediate relief, that the ingenuity of humanity can fix your problems. So invincible is this faith in humanity that men now think they can change the definition of death. Dead might not really mean dead after all. The whole science of cryonics, which is the science of freezing the body, in the hope that there will be such an advance in coming years that we'll be able to reverse that death. And so the definition of death now is in the hands of humanity. And they speak of the current definition of death might not be the same as the future definition of death. Men might be able to revive. That, beloved, is man's faith in humanity. That's the advances that humanity has made. But the point that I want us to see from this portion of scripture today is that there are limitations on humanity. Humanity is harnessed. The reality of this harness is seen in two verses in the section of Ecclesiastes that we have read today. You see in verse 15, that which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered. And in verse 24 of chapter 2, there is nothing better for a man than he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labour. We're going to get to that verse and explain that verse a little later on. But these two verses bracket this section of Ecclesiastes, and I believe would have us understand that there is a harness on humanity that humanity cannot break. That the sons of the man, you see the phrase there in verse 13, and we cannot but think back to Genesis chapter 3. God hath given to the sons of the man, not the sons of men, but the sons of man, this vanity that harnesses humanity is attributed to Adam, as we've seen already in our study in Genesis chapter 3. And it's been given to the sons of Adam to be exercised therewith. That we are bound, beloved, by certain laws in this world, that we are powerless to change these conditions, that we are powerless to free ourselves from them, we are powerless to go beyond. No matter how advanced we become, no matter how intelligent humanity becomes with accumulated knowledge, there is a bound beyond which we cannot go. There is a harness that keeps humanity. There is a fundamental limit on humanity that we cannot cross. Man is harnessed by vanity. And of course, as Christians, in the Reformed tradition, we speak of the doctrine of total depravity. And in that doctrine of total depravity, we understand that part of that total depravity is its inability, man's inability, to do anything spiritually. And so therefore, in that doctrine and a doctrinal aspect of theology of total depravity, we understand that men are powerless spiritually. But do we ever think of the fact that we are powerless practically, physically? That physically we have no power to add, as Christ said, a cubit unto our stature. In Matthew chapter 5 and the verse 36 we read that we cannot change one hair white or black. Right? You may colour it. You may get from the pharmacy that which colours your hair. But in reality, and ultimately and fundamentally, you cannot change a white hair to make it black. Providentially. There are providences that we cannot change. Daniel chapter 4 verse 35. And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. And he doeth according to his will in the army of heaven. And among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand, or say unto him, what doest thou? Intellectually, we're harnessed also. This is what we read in Job 42, verse 3. Who is he that hideth counsel without knowledge? Therefore have I uttered that I understood not. Things too wonderful for me, which I knew not. Job says, in Job 20, in verse 22, we read that man in his fullness of his sufficiency, he shall be in straits. Man at his best, in other words, man at his best is in straits. He's limited. He's harnessed. He's bound by the laws that the Lord has put in place. That which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered. And it is the Lord, as we've said, puts this harness upon us. As we read in Genesis chapter 3, verses 17 to 19. We read also in Romans chapter 8, this very same concept, this biblical concept of the harnessing of humanity. For the creature was made subject to vanity. Romans 8, 20. Not willingly, but by reason of him who hath subjected the same in hope. This is what Paul tells us. And he tells us in the next verse what that vanity is, what that subjection is. Because the creature itself also shall be delivered from the bondage of corruption. What is the vanity that harnesses humanity? It is the bondage of corruption. According to Paul in Romans 8:20-21. Whatever man puts his hand to on this earth, whether it is intellectual, whether it is physical, whether it's moral, emotional, whether it's the arts or science, whether it's economics or politics, whatever man puts his hand to on this earth is subject to the harness of vanity, the bondage of corruption. And he cannot go beyond that. And we see here in chapter 1 of Ecclesiastes, verse 15, the inability of man to rectify the world. The inability of man to rectify the world. He says, Solomon says, I have seen all the works, verse 14, that are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and vexation of spirit. That which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered. And putting it very simply, is that there are things in this world that we cannot change. Fundamental law. There are things in this world that we cannot change. Why? Because we are harnessed by the vanity, the bondage of corruption. But not only is that a fundamental law as we see it objectively in the world, but beloved, Solomon here in this section of the book is speaking autobiographically. He's speaking of himself. This is what he has done. This is what he is discovering. I have seen all the works that are done under the heaven, verse 14. I commune with mine own heart. I give my heart to know. I perceived. All of this Solomon is doing himself. He is discovering this himself, and he discovers in verse 15 that if there's something crooked in the world, if there's something twisted in the world, if there's a defect in the world, can it be straightened? He finds that he himself, while he was the wisest of all men, while he was the richest of all men, he himself could not change that. He himself was impotent to achieve anything beyond the boundaries of this life. There may be inequities in this world that drive you to insanity. There may be inequities in this world that drive you to despair. But beloved, understand that this is the world we live in. And that you, by all your ingenuity and by all your wisdom and by all the efforts that you make, cannot change certain things in this world. We are not all powerful, contrary to what humanity might tell us. We do not know all things. We are bound in the bondage of corruption. This is what he says also in chapter 7 and verse 13 of the same book. Consider the work of God. For who can make that straight which he hath made crooked? And the fact that it's crooked is attributed to God. It's the work of God. God has rendered these things crooked. God has cursed the earth for man's sake. What Genesis chapter 3 tells us. Not only has the inability to rectify the world, but man has the inability to find any good in himself. Verse 24 of chapter 2, which brings this section to a close. Verse 24 of chapter 2, there is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink, that he should make his soul enjoy the good of his labour. This also I saw that it was from the hand of God. This verse, in the translation that we have, is misleading. It is not saying that all that we can do is to eat, drink and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Solomon is not promoting an Epicurean lifestyle. He's not promoting hedonism here. He's not saying all you do is just go out and enjoy yourself. It could be translated, it is not a good thing in man. Or some translated, this good is not in man. And then the than, you see there in the verse 24, the than, T-H-A-N, which is in italics, indicates that it was not in the original, but it's put in there to give us the sense of it. And it could be translated, but. And so, but all that he can do is to enjoy what he has. There is nothing good in man, but all that he can do is to enjoy what he has. And there's a similar verse where this word occurs in Isaiah chapter 1 verse 6, which gives us an idea of what Solomon is saying here. Isaiah chapter 1 and the verse 6, and we read, from the sole of the foot even to the head there is no soundness in it. The same word then is translated, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. And it plays in to what Solomon is saying in this entire book. From the sole of the foot even unto the head there is no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. So if I could paraphrase this verse, verse 24, we would read, there is no good in man, or there is no inherent good in man. There is nothing in man himself, but all he can do is to eat and drink. Or all he can do, in other words, is to get on with life, to live life, go through the necessities of life, and enjoy the good of his labour. Because this enjoyment, that ability, as we have looked in previous studies, that ability to enjoy life, having seen that there is nothing good in ourselves whereby we can fix the world, while there is nothing good in ourselves whereby we can find satisfaction, nothing inherent in humanity. But he must eat and drink and enjoy life, because this enjoyment is from the hand of God. This also I saw that it was from the hand of God. Beloved, this is the world we live in, harnessed by vanity, the corruption, the bondage of corruption. It is perhaps one reason why there are so many young people who find themselves in despair, so many young people who find themselves disillusioned by the world around them, that they become so despairing in this world. Because they have been indoctrinated by humanity. They have been indoctrinated by the philosophy that everything is in their power. And this is what we hear today. That everything is in your power. There's an inner strength to generate the light, to do something, to make something of yourself. Young people are optimistically told by the mantras of the world that the world lies at their feet. They can do anything they want. The world is your oyster. The sky is your limit. You can do anything you want. You can do anything you put your mind to. But when the rubber hits the road and the young person goes out into this big bad world and discovers that they haven't got the power that their counselors told them they had, they discover that they haven't got the ability that they were told they had, they're disillusioned by it. They're despairing in this bondage of corruption because the world and unfortunately Christian philosophies and so-called Christian counselors have told them and pushed into their minds this humanistic philosophy that there is a life within them that they can do whatever they put their minds to. And then the young person goes out into the world and he finds that he's hit against a brick wall. And as Solomon says in chapter 1 verse 15, that which is crooked cannot be made straight. That's the world, beloved, we live in. That's the real world. A world that is harnessed by vanity. A world that is limited by the bondage of corruption. And whatever Solomon put his hand to here. You look at this whole entire section. Verse 12, I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. I give my heart to seek. And down that chapter to verse 18. This is Solomon's ambition. This is what he, in this autobiographical part of the book, Solomon, if I could put it in the modern jargon, in language that we understand, Solomon, beloved, was following the American dream. He was ambitious for what he could get out of life. He was ambitious for what he could learn in life, from what he could do in life. And it is this ambition, this thinking good about ourselves, this injecting of self-confidence that is continually spewed out by the media, that you can follow the American dream, that you can do whatever you want to do. And as the son of Ronald Reagan, Ron Reagan, recently said, that the American dream is an overused cliche. And his father lived it. Emptiness. And without getting political, I think the economic state of America today shows us what the American dream is. It's vanity. Vanity. Solomon in chapter 2 follows human pleasures. I said in mine heart, go to now, I will prove thee, I will test you. He says to his heart, I'm going to test you with mirth. If this ambition doesn't satisfy you, let's test my heart. Let's see if my heart can be satisfied with mirth, with human pleasure. And he squeezes human pleasure till he finds there is nothing left in it. Whatever he put his hand to, whatever he wanted. So verse 9, I was great and increased more than all they that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. Whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. Whatever he wanted. Solomon had no limits on his credit card. No limits. And he bought whatever he wanted. And discovered that this is also vanity. He tried in verses 12 to 17 human wisdom. And I'm not going to read and delineate all the differences of the verses and throughout this section. But verses 12 to 17. Human wisdom. He sought wisdom. He had ambition for pleasure. Pleasure didn't suit him. And so he goes into this search and quest for wisdom. And he discovers that the wise man looks forward. The wise man makes plans. And understand this, beloved. And it's not wrong to make plans for the future. It's not wrong to lay up for the future. But it is wrong to lean and rest on those. The wise man makes plans. The fool lives for the moment. But Solomon discovers that the wise man just dies like the fool. The wise man has lived his life making plans for tomorrow. The compass that guides him is the future. And this is what he's living for. And he's always 4 or 5 steps ahead of himself, planning the future and making sure that he's going aright. And there's someone beside him, his next door neighbour, who's just living for the moment, enjoying life. And when they die, they just die and go into the ground like the rest. There's no difference. The only difference is that the wise man who planned for the future, who had accumulated all of his riches, leaves what he has gained to the next man. And who knows whether that man is going to be a wise man or a fool. So you accumulate all of this stuff. And you get your inheritance and you look forward to handing that inheritance over to your descendants, your children. But who knows that your children, that stuff that you have worked for, that stuff that you have labored for, that stuff that you have amassed, who knows whether your child is going to waste it and squander it. The wise man dies like the fool. And then in section 18, chapter 2, verses 18 to 23, he deals with this whole idea of labouring, of hard work and labour, which is good in itself. But as it is limited by humanity, and as it is limited by circumstances on this earth, it's vain, it's temporary, it's passing away. That's the reality of this harness, beloved. We cannot escape it. We cannot break free from it. But like a harness which limits us, a harness is used to guide and direct. The yoke is put on with the harness on the oxen to guide and direct the oxen. And you as an ox, if you want to keep the metaphor, as the ox can buck and kick and twist and turn and rebel against the yoke, but the harness is still on you. Now the reality of this harness on humanity is for a purpose. God does not just dump this corruption on humanity as a punishment. We've seen that in Genesis chapter 3, that the punishment of sin, the wages of sin is death, right, as Romans tells us. The corruption, the curse that was put upon the ground, man was not cursed after death came upon him. The curse was on the ground for man's sake. And we notice the difference when we studied in Genesis chapter 3. The curse was death in the previous verses. In chapter 3 verse 15, the Lord deals with that curse in saying he's going to bring one who's going to destroy death. Now, in chapter 3 of Genesis, verses 17 to 19, God is giving a chastisement, a corrective upon humanity. And here we come to the reason for this harness. The reason for this harness. And as Solomon says here, in verse 13 of chapter 1, and God, and I give my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under the heaven. This sore travail hath God given to the sons of the man, Adam, to be exercised therewith. So you can buck and kick at the harness and the yoke that's upon you. But it is given to us to exercise us, to guide us, to show us that there's nothing we can do, to show us that the limitations upon humanity we are powerless to break free from. Therefore, as Solomon says later on in the book and throughout the book, fear God. Fear God. Forget the stuff of the world. Enjoy the stuff that you have, because the enjoyment of that is a gift from God, but ultimately and throughout your whole life and woven throughout the stuff that you have in life, fear God. Fear God. Because the harness is still on you. That is the reason for this harness. And that's what Paul said in Romans chapter 8, the verse 20. We are subjected in hope. We are subjected in hope. The harness is put upon us in the hope, if we have wisdom and grace is given for us to see that this harness is given to us and laid upon us, subjected us to the bondage of this corruption in hope that Christ will break it by the power of the cross. That's the hope that we have as Christians. And that's the reason for this harness that still remains upon the believer. Because we as believers need reined in. We need the harness upon us to see the vanity of this world, to see the emptiness, to see the transitory nature of this world, in order that we might be turned again to see the hope that lies for us in Christ. The freedom of eternity in the glorified state. Thomas Boston, the Scottish Presbyterian in the 17th century, preached a sermon that was based on chapter 7, verse 13, which he entitled The Crook in the Lot. And by this he meant that there, as we have already looked, there's a glitch in the lot you have, your lot in life. There's a crook in it, there's a glitch in it, there's a fault in it. This vanity that we've been looking at, this bondage of corruption. And in that sermon, he took three texts in this order. Ecclesiastes 7, verse 13. Consider that the works of God, who can make that straight which he hath made crooked? Whereby he lays out that God has made this world crooked. God has cursed the earth for our sake. To teach us something. To guide us somewhere. The next text that he took was Proverbs 16:19. Better is it to be of an humble spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud. Better is it to be of a humble spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud. The last text that he took was 1 Peter 5:6, where he said, humble yourselves therefore under the mighty hand of God, that he might exalt you in due time. Beloved, I believe Solomon would have us learn, as he comes to the latter part of the book, and as he wades through the vanity of life, he would have us learn today that there's a harness on humanity, that there is limitations on humanity, fundamentally, on humanity and upon you as an individual, that you cannot break, that you cannot make straight that which he has made crooked. But that harness is on there for a reason. It is not to beat you down. It is not to destroy you. That harness is on there to guide you to the truth. To give you an understanding of the only exit, the only way out of the bondage of corruption is in Christ. And we are subjected to this bondage of corruption in hope that he will one day break that for us, and we will one day be glorified. We will be spirits made perfect. That's the lesson, I believe, Solomon would have us learn. We humble ourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, and he will exalt us. Let's bow in prayer.